call to order the regular session of the Berlin Mayor and Council for Monday, January 27th, 2014. And first, I'd like to invite everyone to join the Mayor and Council and vote, sign the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Please join us in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We're trying to be as efficient as possible, since I understand it's every hour it's supposed to get colder.
It was warm today, Jake. Actually melted a little bit.
Yes, and that's something to do, just keep in mind. Fortunately, a lot of melting happened today. Unfortunately, it's all going to turn to ice when you're out. Just be careful when you go out in the morning. First, we're going to start with our usual approval of the previous session minutes. For the council's consideration, approval of the regular session minutes of January 13th. We have a motion by Councilmember Lynch to approve the regular session minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Let the record show the minutes were passed in unanimous vote and that all council members are present. Second is the approval of the executive session minutes of January 13th. We have a motion by Councilmember Lynch to approve the executive session minutes of January 13th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, once again, the minutes were approved unanimously. The reason for the executive session on the 13th was for the Mayor and Council to discuss a personnel matter that affects one or more specific individuals. Next, as happens throughout the year, we're very pleased to have with us the Worcester Youth and Family Counseling Services. They gave us an update on their Berlin Youth Program, or Berlin Youth Club.
Good evening. First of all, I'd like to say I voted. I hope all of you did as well.
Good.
And secondly, I came to introduce myself. I'm Steve Taylor, the new Executive Director of Worcester Youth and Family Counseling Services, taking over for Teresa Fields. Have an awesome staff. I'm really excited to be here and be part of the program. I thank you for your continued support, and I'm going to turn it over to Cindy. She's going to do a short presentation for you.
Cindy, how do you pronounce your last name?
Gilardi.
Gilardi, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
And then first of all, Steve, congratulations.
Thank you.
I hope you received the letter.
I did, thank you.
And I think it's a perfect fit.
Appreciate that.
Hopefully, I anticipate you just take it to the next level. So.
Yeah, I'm going to try.
Okay. Well, now we're done. We expect you to sit. Just enjoy the ride.
Thank you.
Yes, Cindy, go ahead.
I'm here for Melanie. I'm temporarily taking over her position while she's on maternity leave. She's doing great. I know you all know her.
She had a little boy.
She had a little boy, Jack. Yep, and she's doing great, and he's adorable. Okay, so I'm just going to report on what the kids did in the last quarter for the Berlin Youth Club. And here's some demographics of the children we served. 23 African-American at 49%, 17 Caucasian kids at 36%, and then 7 Hispanic kids. And our first slide is a Hands Are for Healing craft night that we held with the kids. We partnered with Life Crisis for Domestic Violence Awareness Month. The kids decorated pumpkins and they created hand medallions to represent positive relationships in their lives. They also spent a full day field trip at the Breckenridge Farm, so they had an opportunity to visit a pumpkin patch and a corn maze. They really had a great time being outside. They had a good day. This was a pre-Thanksgiving giveaway. On a day off from school, the kids created ornaments to be used for a fundraiser for their group. And they also made handmade scarves, and they went to the senior center in Berlin, and they visited and interacted with the seniors that day, and they handed out over 20 scarves to them. The kids have been making cards for the troops a couple times in the summer and then once in the fall. They partnered with Stephen Decatur High School Connections Club and also the American Legion Post 166. We wanted to say thank you to both of these groups for organizing this project and finding the cards that they made a nice home. They had a Thanksgiving project and they had some pizza. They were first given a quick nutrition lesson by a volunteer nursing student. She reviewed healthy snack choices for the kids, and then they made their own homemade trail mix that was a healthy snack for them. They were also supposed to paint two libraries at St. Paul's Church by the Sea, but because of the events that took place that week, they weren't able to do that, but they're hoping to be able to do that in the future. The kids participated in the holiday parade again this year, and our theme this year was rocking around the Christmas tree, and the kids dressed up like holiday rock stars, and they had a good time. Everything went smoothly, and as always, they really enjoyed the event and had a good time with that. They participated in the reindeer run this year by making ornaments that they could sell. The bottom ornament was a special ornament that they had made in honor of Carolyn Cordial, which was well received, and it was a really beautiful ornament that had glitter and a feather in it, and a really nice tribute to our friend Carolyn. Oops. They also participated in a make and take craft night. This event allowed the kids to make items to take home as gifts, but they also made some ornaments to give to some nonprofits. And they participated in a holiday photo booth, so that was really fun. We had a backdrop for them, and they were able to take pictures. Some of the things they made were the dog poles up top, and those were donated to the Humane Society, the Worcester County Humane Society. And they loved them so much there that I just got a call the other day, and they're requesting that we make some more, and they want to sell them at the Spring Fest. So that's a great thing. They made the other ornaments. The bottom picture that they made, those were all individual Christmas trees that the kids made, and we put them all together as a thank you to the Ray Rice Foundation because they donated school supplies this year and backpacks to the kids. Yeah, it was really nice stuff. So they made this great Christmas tree to mail to the Ray Rice Foundation to say thank you. That was really cute. They also made some ornaments for Atlantic General Hospital for the palliative care unit, and they were given to the patients who were in the care unit over the holidays, the people that had to spend the holidays in the hospital. Here's just some more pictures regarding the fun things they did. That's in a big pile of corn down there at Breckenridge Farms. That's at the senior center. Then up top is the holiday parade. And they were really cute with their boas and their little guitars for the holiday parade. They had a great time. And there they are out dancing outside of the parade. And the bottom photo is the woman, I can't remember her name, but she's the therapist from the Life Crisis for the Domestic Violence Awareness, and she was there. This is when they were making their handprints. Those were the hand medallions. They make their own clay, and then they made these really cool little ornaments where they could stick their hand in the medallion. Here they are at the farm, having a great day. Looks like it was a beautiful day. Top photo is the holiday photo booth. We had all kinds of props, the mustaches and the frames for the kids, and they took their picture. They also made the ornaments in the window for a Thanksgiving display. The photo booth at the bottom, and then the handprint at top. There they are. They really are. I had the kids today, and they really are, for the first time as a temporary person, and they really are a great group of kids. Some more pictures. Oh, and that's it.
Excellent. If you give us an idea, because I know you memorize all this, how often does the Burma Youth Club get together during the summer, and then now that we're in the middle of the winter, what's the schedule?
Well, whenever they have a day off school, we try to plan an event. Today they were out of school, and we did a Martin Luther King Jr. Day theme. It was called I Have a Dream, and we encouraged them to wear their pajamas, and then we did a whole bunch of dream activity, art projects, and we actually made a video of the kids when they decided on what their dream was. They all came in front of, we made a little backdrop, and they told us what their dream was. So they also, in the summer, they meet more. They meet almost every day, and she plans activities for them. And we even do special nights. If I know they took them to the Harlem Globetrotters last year, and I know that's coming up. We're looking into that again.
And the second Friday arts night, they
right.
were in art class. That's been more popular, too,
yep.
to coincide with the town.
With the art stroll, right. We always have an art project for the kids to come on in and do.
Excellent. Good. And you're getting, now is the public invited to come in and observe those art projects?
I believe so. I mean, I think
that's
so,
great.
Yeah.
Because working with the Arts and Entertainment Committee, mm-hmm. it's sort of wonderful. Let them know. Let folks know.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's great. Does anyone have any questions?
I just think with the amount of money that the mayor and council donates as a grant and all, I just think, my granddaughter goes, I just think you guys do so much. It's not that, a lot of money for what the activities the community supports in real well, movie tickets, bowling, mini golf, Frontier Town, let's come to the water park. Mm-hmm. The community has really stepped up and supported them also. And, I keep seeing it growing and growing, and, I'm hoping that we can move it to a full summer camp, every day, all day. That'd be awesome. It's something for the children to do, get some activities.
And thank you for bringing up the point that so many things that you do are obviously there's the materials, but so many of the activities you do are donated or highly subsidized by the business community. And, that's been, not surprising, but extremely gratifying.
It is. It's pretty wonderful. And it's great that the kids now are giving back, too, to the community
yes.
by making the dog poles and visiting the seniors. I mean, it's great to give. It's great to get, but it's also great to give out, too.
Yeah. And I think that, charitable giving is something that is learned.
Right.
That doesn't just happen out of the blue.
And
I think that's a wonderful aspect that, we don't all have treasure to give, but everybody has some time and talent.
Right. And they're very proud.
At a very early age.
Yep, and they're very proud of everything they make. They made these dream boxes today, and they turned out beautiful. And they just took their time. Even the littlest child that was there today, they just really took their time, and they were just beautiful dream boxes. And many of them, they were for themselves, and many of them were saying, we're going to give them as gifts. I'm going to give this to my grandma or my mom.
Great.
It was wonderful.
How do you handle the expense? Like, say, the Globetrotters, I know that's not inexpensive.
Well, I know we have a budget, and we have the vans that we take, and we have the money through the grant, I believe. And we do try to get people to subsidize some of the expense. I do know that. I'm really good at that, actually.
The staff there really is involved. Like you said, the kids, they're comfortable and relaxed there. They like coming. That's why they did such a good job on it, because it's the environment. I'm glad to see a man in the house there now, too. That chief. That was their only male influence there. It was all women working. It's nice to see, because there's a lot of guys in there, too.
Yeah.
That's one of the advantages of a nonprofit as well. We can do a lot of leveraging with other organizations, not in addition to the business community, the other philanthropic organizations that give to us to support these kinds of programs. So it's a little atypical from just a government-run program that doesn't have the advantage of that leveraging capability. So
that's why I think that's where we're trying to have partnerships, all kinds of partnerships that normally don't exist, because that way everybody can bring something to the table that if they were trying to do it all on their own,
right.
it's just not possible.
Right.
And fitting the pieces together. I think this is an example of many things that are going to evolve over the next generation or so. We are extremely proud of what you've done.
Thank you. We're
fortunate that we had the opportunity to try something new. Mm-hmm. And I don't see how we can make a better investment of any dollars we spend than the money we put into helping our youth grow, mature, discover, and become great future citizens. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Anyone? Okay. We're on the hook for at least a little while longer. We look forward to seeing you again, I guess, in the late spring.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you.
Great. Congratulations, Kinsey.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have a motion to amend the employee handbook. And, are you going to lead this, or Jeff? Okay.
Yes, sir. Good evening, Mayor and Council. In front of you this evening I'm requesting from the Mayor and Council the motion to approve the addition of a vacation buyback policy to be added to the employee handbook and to remove the authority of the town administrator to approve the carryover of vacation time from fiscal year to fiscal year. And what I'd like to do before we get to the motion and also to the language that's in the proposed language change, just a real brief summary of why this vacation buyback is before you folks this evening. And from my perspective, I look at it, it's two-pronged. One, we have I hate to beat it to death, but it's a reality. We have a senior workforce, an aging workforce that has amassed quite a bit of vacation. And then in turn, it allows us the opportunity, as I mentioned, it's two-pronged, to reduce the liability. As we're well aware, the vacation accrual that we have for our employees is a liability to the employer, to the town. And then the second prong of this, it will limit future growth on that accrual by virtue of the criteria that we put into the policy itself, and when you have that cold hard cap on that 240. The main criteria to this entire policy, number one, and full-time employees can sell back a maximum of 60 hours per year. The employee must have at least 160 hours of vacation, and that's projected based on the employee accrual rate at the end of the fiscal year to be eligible to participate. After the payout is completed, the employee must have 80 hours of vacation remaining on the books, or the sellback is void. And my thought process behind the requirement to have an employee have whatever that number of hours is remaining on the books, it still forces the hand, if you will, or provides the tool if the employee needs the time off and needs the break and needs that time for refreshment. What I don't want you all to get into or me to be a part of is allowing an employee to sell back everything that they have. Because I've been there, we've all been there in our workplaces and seen when an employee needs something, they need time, they don't have it, and I don't want to be the catalyst and then try to make that happen with our employee group. The employee themselves must make the request for the buyback in writing, and once it is received, that election is non-revocable. The pay rate that's used, and again, this is a plus to my employer, the mayor and council, the pay rate that's used would be the pay rate in the current fiscal year. So using the current FY14, if this year you all approve this, we make this happen, the pay rate that would be used would be the pay rate that the employee has on the books as of June 30 of 2014.
Is that self-adjusting each year as we go forward?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's right.
And this is the pay rate that's going to be used to calculate the 80%.
That's correct. And I'll hit that in just a second. And then the other caveat is the employee must take at least 40 consecutive hours of vacation. And I've had questions from our employees on that. That doesn't mean Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. That would suffice, but it could be if an employee's normal work schedule was Monday through Friday, if they took off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday, that's 40 consecutive scheduled hours.
What's the reasoning behind the consecutive?
I go back to what is the intent of vacation? It's an opportunity for you. It's an opportunity for all of us to recharge the cells, if you will. So I arbitrarily, again, picked that. I thought that was, just something that was sound, and we're forcing the hand for the employee to take some time off. That's my logic behind it. That said and done, once the employee makes the election, there's an optional election form that would have to be received by me no later than the close of business on April 30th. Once that's received, I would do the calculations to make sure that they meet all the criteria that's spelled out here. Then the pay rate, as Councilmember Burrell asked, that pay rate, when I do that calculation, which is before the end of the fiscal year, I would multiply those number of hours that they're eligible to sell back by their current rate, and then again multiply it by a factor of 80, of 0.80, excuse me, and then the dollar amount that the employee would be eligible for would be 80% of the hours for which they're eligible. Okay.
I think one way of putting this finishes, or at least finishes filling in some of the gaps that were left by the changes we made in 2009. Because at that time we had a major update in the handbook and lots of policies. Mm-hmm. But from our experience since then, we found that there's still a little bit of tweaking to do. And just to show, well, we had first year after that new policy was put in place, we had a total liability of $190,208 in accrued vacation pay. And over the 3 years since, that's now reached to over $250,000. So what this will do, among all these other things which are good for the employees, they're also to benefit the town by putting a cap on the accrued liability of owed vacation time.
That's correct.
And hopefully, the most important thing is for people to start using their vacations, especially as the workforce gets older. We want them to stay sharp and happy and refreshed. And I know some people actually, I know it's hard to believe, some people actually need a little nudge. And some of the folks are so dedicated to that. In fact, they have to help them out the door and say, just enjoy yourself.
Absolutely agree with that. And I also would say that the hard cap, the reality is the hard cap, that's going to put the liability, help with that liability. It's going to afford an employee an opportunity to sell back at a savings to the employer at 80% versus 100, and or the employee's going to use the vacation time. So I see that all positive. I do.
So you can only request during the month of April and paid out during the month of July.
That's correct. And my logic behind that to the mayor and council is we sit before you usually the end of April, May time frame to talk budget for the new FY. I want to be able to sit before you the first part of May and say, if you approve this, this is what the cost is going to be for the FY that's forthcoming. And then obviously the provision, as you're well aware, the language in here, if you guys say it's feasibly not possible this year, then it's not possible. Okay. And what I would like to have you focus your attention on in the packet that you have behind the motion is an actual excerpt from the current employee policies and procedures manual. And in that manual, or in this excerpt that you have, the language that's been changed, if you take a look at section 6.11 titled vacation leave, and if you drop about halfway down the page, the bold print with the strikeout, there's a strikeout on one word. Current language reads vacation in excess of 30 days will be lost. I would like to change that word lost to forfeited. I just think it's more appropriate in my opinion. And then the last sentence, the town administrator will not approve any carryover of vacation time from one fiscal year to the next. That's the language that I'm proposing that you add. Also in that particular portion of the handbook, if you look over on the right-hand page, I've added a section 6.12, titled Vacation Buyback, and that is a direct replica, word for word, of the policy that was presented to you each time in the executive session. So there's nothing new there, but that's the exact language. So what I'm asking of the mayor and council is to approve the language change in that particular two sections of the or the new the current section 6.11, and then the addition of the language for the section 6.12 of the vacation buyback.
Does anyone have any questions?
I do.
Yes,
in this I think there are a couple items that need a little clarity. In 6.12, vacation buyback, eligibility criteria, E, the pay rate used is the employee's pay rate as of June 30th of the year of request.
Correct.
Okay, so I think that should be put.
Okay.
And I'm a little confused by F. The employee must have taken at least 40 consecutive hours of vacation off. I don't think you need the off.
Okay.
Of vacation in the previous 12 months.
Now, prior
does
to
that go back to April of the prior year?
Yes. From the date of, from the cutoff date of April 30th, 12 months back.
Must have taken at least 40 consecutive hours of vacation. I take out after all. In the previous 12 months.
Prior, I'll add the language prior to April 30th.
Okay.
Does it make it clear?
Clear.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the one I really think is confusing is B on the next page. During the month of June, and I would put in there June in the year of request, a confirmation letter will be sent to all employees who requested to sell back vacation hours. The employee shall receive payment for the requested hours before the end of July of the year following the request. Because now you're in two different years, right?
Well,
fiscal years.
Yeah, fiscal year, okay.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
So I think in June should be
okay.
In the year of request, and the July should be in the year following
gotcha.
The year of request.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And again, that absolutely makes it well. I don't think there's any other way to interpret it.
I think it's hanging there without
okay.
Does anyone have any questions or comments regarding the recommendation to institute a vacation buyback policy for our panel personnel?
The only one I have is 48 consecutive. I mean, I can see where somebody may just want to go. I want to take off Thursday, Friday, then to give Saturday something off. They'll have a four-day stretch there to do it again to get their number of vacation days and spread it out a little bit over the calendar year.
I'm making the recommendation.
Right. That's the only thing I have.
The way it's written, I'm saying they have to take 40 hours off consecutively to be eligible.
My intent, again, is to reduce that liability. That's the intent. And I firmly believe that whether it's 32 consecutive hours, whether it's 48 consecutive hours, whatever, you put that caveat in, that must happen. And then if that employee elects to sell back 35 hours, at least whatever you put as a caveat that must happen, plus what they want to sell, that takes that ceiling of 240 and will greatly reduce it. So, I mean...
But what would be the difference if they took the 40 hours over three different periods during the year because maybe they have a grandchild or they have somebody that's graduating from school or something?
But if you have
a thousand different reasons why people would need some more flexibility.
I absolutely agree with you. But again, what I share with the mayor and council is a third of our workforce, that 40 hours that we're talking about, they accrue six settings of 40 hours.
Excuse me?
Six groupings of 40 hours and or 240 hours.
What you're saying is if some of the workforce took their time that way, this policy wouldn't be doing anything to keep their hours from getting accrued. That.
This would, is what I'm saying.
No, but I'm saying if they took their time off, like Troy said, you know, a Friday and a Monday here and there throughout the year, they would still be accruing so much time that they would still have all this
unless
time.
They had a lot of Mondays and a lot of Fridays. I mean, because it's a factor of, it's 40 hours, 2 days versus 40 hours is a factor of 2.5.
And that is another issue too, that when it comes to customer service, it doesn't matter to the citizens, whoever, if it's a Monday or a Friday. I can see what we don't want town, the municipal workforce to be pleaded to the point we can't efficiently provide services at the beginning or the end of the week, because we've incentivized picking time in small chunks.
I'm open to any suggestions.
Yeah, my question is just, is it going to mess you up by changing it?
It's not going to mess anything up, but I still think you need to have the caveat in there where a controllable portion of their vacation time is being used. And again, with everyone having the foresight to understand, I'm guilty sitting before you today, and most of us in here are guilty. There's 40 hours at a pop. I mean, it happens, but it doesn't happen a lot. And that's because I think we're all professional enough to know that we have a job to do. Okay? So everyone in this room, when I look around, you know, has someone that's capable of stepping up to fill in the void when they're gone. And I hope that is the case when we look at succession planning for all of our employee group with anyone. So that 40 hours, again, the thought that goes to my mind in the school that I come from, that I was brought up in, employees need a time to recharge the batteries. I can't sit here and tell you whether Council Member Purnell only needs 5 hours to charge his batteries or if Council Member Hall needs 50 hours to charge their batteries. I can't make that decision. But I do know that from a Society of Human Resources Management, the magic number that still floats out there, right, wrong, or indifferent, 40 hours. Again, I don't make that number up. I use that number.
I would say, why don't we, because this is a matter of judgment, try this for a couple of years based on this 40-hour minimum, see how it works. If we find it's causing a problem, we can always revisit it. It doesn't mean we automatically change it, but let's see if we even have a problem. I don't think we are, and I think the other side, too, that at least everything I read and the seminars go to and workshops and everything, is that although there is less physical labor, generally speaking, in jobs than there ever been, the level of stress is unprecedented. And I think there, again, that's another... The level of stress and the level of activity and multitasking, I think, are all reasons to encourage people to take some time.
Well, to the mayor and council for a second, the one thing that I took the liberty of doing this morning, I sent an email to all department heads and said, you know, making the assumption that mayor and council approved this evening, what I'd like to do, as soon as you want me, I want to come out to the employee groups. I've had one department head get back with me thus far and say, you know, I'd like you to come Thursday of this week. So what I did today, I went ahead and did the research on all the employees in that particular area, and all the employees, ironically, with the exception of the department head, have met the criteria. Okay, when I say met the criteria, they've had that 40 hours.
You persuaded me.
Okay,
just as a suggestion, why don't you say take at least 40 consecutive hours, of which 40 hours of which 24 or 32 need to be consecutive.
Well, I think what Jean said is a good idea, though, because I think what's going to happen if we do adopt this, I think that, you know, a lot of employees are going to look at their time, they're going to look at the buyback. I think that there's going to be a flurry of activity the first time, because people are going to try to get compliant with the new policy so that they don't do that and get accrued that much, so next year, you know. And then that way we can come back and revisit it again, because basically we're revisiting the manual again, because we did something on this, like G said, in 09, and then we're back here again revisiting and tweaking it up. So, you know, I mean, maybe we could think about that, see, you know, have your meetings if we approve this with all the department heads and see how the staff, you know, shakes down, who applies to do it, who's not, who's eligible. and then you could look at it again to see about changing.
And I think the reason I suggested 2 years is because the first year, I think, will be an anomaly. It'll be the year where everybody tries to figure out what is their best. Once it gets in place, then I think people will, you know, hopefully start doing their vacation planning.
And it's going to go away in the future.
That's right.
Because the trend is not what we have.
I think where this is the first year, and we want to build in as much flexibility as possible, I would suggest that the word consecutive be removed. And I understand your intentions of well-being of employees and making sure they get recharged, but let's have the employee try to manage that themselves. As long as they would take the 40 hours within the previous 12 months, I don't have a problem with not being consecutive. Did we inform employees that this was going to be on the agenda tonight?
We did.
So that would be my suggestion, just to remove that word consecutive.
Does anybody? Is everybody fine with that? I think we're not going to know exactly all the effects until we do it. Mm-hmm. But I do think the premise and the need have been clearly demonstrated. And it's like I say, it's a flaw in the current system. And again, it's unique. It wouldn't be happening. And we want to encourage our folks to stay. We don't want to encourage them to leave. So we have to have some balance here between crew vacation. I think this at least is a very honest and straightforward attempt to address that issue.
If I may ask, the I've got all the changes, but the one I've not heard one way or the other. This 40 consecutive, or is it 40?
We were saying 40.
Got it. Okay.
We moved the consecutive.
But it's 40 hours within the prior 12 months.
Got it.
Yes. Yeah. Let's start with a lower threshold. We'll see how it goes. If it becomes necessary, then we'll deal with it. But let's at least agree that let's give it a couple years so we can see how it's actually working. Because the first year, I don't think it's going to be a...
And I don't have any idea as well.
Yeah.
Do you have any feel for how people take their vacation? Do they take it in blocks?
Well, as I said,
you said everybody other than department heads.
Well, no. What I can tell you, one specific department. Today, I did the research because I'm going to speak with that group on Thursday morning, and when I looked up, to be honest with you, I was surprised. All the employees in that department within the last, when you look at a 12-month window going backwards, all of them had taken a 40-hour block a ton consecutive, with the exception of the department head. Now, that same group of people had quite a number, a day here, a day there, 2 days here. But my point was that there was an entire department that I was concerned with that probably all of them didn't take that 40 consecutive hours, but they did. So, kind of
fooled me. That's only one department.
That's only one department.
Well, let's take it one step at a time. I think the company got a major upgrade in the policy. It addresses a real obligation on part of town, and it gives people an incentive to take vacation. And they don't lose their hours, they get reimbursed for the hours that they choose not to take.
And that's the biggest thing.
I mean, that's what we're not going to take. Hopefully, the ideal situation is that they have more hours than they can take. They take the hours they can, cash in the other hours, and pay for the vacation.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's ultimately an ideal scenario that we hope that it's up to you.
Correct.
But I would like to say that I think your thoughts behind having 80 hours remain is really a good thought.
So are we in agreement with the changes that have been suggested by
everyone?
If I may, Mayor and Council, what I'll do is I'll, based off the assumption that you're going to approve this, with a caveat, tomorrow I will send out a revised language That way I can, you all can take a peek and say, no, we didn't say that. Or, yeah, it's good.
So I'd like to move to approve the vacation buyback policy as amended this evening.
Okay. We have a motion by Councilmember Burrell to approve the vacation buyback policy as amended through the discussion tonight's meeting. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Policy is approved. Unanimous.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We're going to table item number 4 and go right into item 5. And
Good evening. First, I'd like to introduce Julia Canfield, the new director of the Berlin Chamber of Commerce, Megan Houston, the new Main Street coordinator, Tom Schultes, the new incoming president of the Chamber of Commerce this Thursday night. If you all haven't bought your tickets, and his lovely wife, Gussie Schultes. So hopefully,
celebrity among the bunch.
Yeah. So I don't know if you have any questions for them. I wanted to get Megan and Joy up here to get a feel for what this is like. As hopefully they'll be coming up here before you more often this whole year, and you won't chew them up too bad, and they won't be so nervous. So this is pretty much what we did last year. There is one change. This is not. We're going to come before you again with every single event a month or so before each event, with roadblocks, with what's going to go on, how it's going to be laid out, all of that. This is just the request for the open container suspension so that we can plan these big events. These are we had 6 last year, asking for 5 right now, with the caveat that we might come back for the 6th one later if something comes up. But we did last year tell you what 6 was all we were going to request. Right now it's just 5.
What is the 6?
Last year it was the International Festival. And we haven't planned that this year. That was Tony's thing, and I told Laura she doesn't have to work on it just yet. We'll give her a year, and then we'll get her to work on it. So,
but what you're doing is considering if you find something that you think is
if it comes up, and we will come before you with the whole request, all that. But we wanted to keep. We promised 6 only for this request of the suspension of the open container law, and that's what we're going to keep it at, but we have dropped one of those.
I'm in favor of 5 anyway.
Well, I know you are. Yeah.
But I'm in favor of what the people want here.
Yeah, so that's what we're...
It's definitely 6, but
even though
more.
I'm in favor of having people be able to buy the drink and the package.
Yeah, I'm going to make your eyes on
that. Well, the part of that, too, is when we have these big crowds for these events, which it has shown, and I can defer to the chief, we are still doing very well with this and haven't had any real major issues with it like what somebody might expect. And we are getting, I tell you, every time we have one of these events, some town calls me saying, how did you do that? We want to do that. How do you do it? Salisbury is now starting to do it a little bit. Their ball drop, first time they've ever done a similar thing, yet we copied their ordinance right out of their book. And yet they're still treading on ice and trying to do it. The one thing, the big change in this whole thing, if Sharon can flip me to a note. This is the way it was last year. I think you have color copies of this in your packet. And this is, again, this is only...
forgot my summer.
This is only the designation, the area, and it's all marked with these signs. One coming in, one going out. Every place has got these signs, 2 or 3 of these signs all throughout this. The one thing, at these points, these are not roadblocks. These are designated signs where people can come and go with an adult beverage. Next slide. This is what we'd like to change it to. No. Yes. But this doesn't have the one that I think was the redo, which you have. Do you have the little blocks in yours?
Yes, that's
yeah.
The next one.
Yeah. I forgot to get into this slide. But anyway, the little blocks are 2 three establishments that sell alcohol that have been kind of left out of this. So, well, we've got a new one coming, the Blacksmith Shop, soon to be open in March. Where Pitt Street Grill was on Pitt Street. Burley Inn Tavern on Pitt Street and William Street. And then Baked Dessert Cafe back here across from Town Hall. And then we'd also like to extend it to include the new Antique Mall and the Visitor Center. This is only for mobility, nothing else. It's not a roadblock or anything. So what we're asking is just, oh yeah, there it is on this. This is side by side.
So the one on the left is existing and the one on the right is the new idea.
It's the new idea. And what it is to incorporate everybody that seems like they've been left out. The three shops on William Street felt left out. Burley Inn Tavern will be left out if we don't include this. Blacksmith Shop. And then Bill Outen with the new Antique Mall has expressed that he would like to be more involved in these bigger events. He wants to be open at night more than the others, than he has been at the other, for Second Friday, things like that. Although there is no open container law during Second Friday, but Bill wants to be more involved with the new antique store. He wants traffic down there. We want traffic down to the visitor center during these events.
My question is there any volunteers or anybody in the areas of these signs so they can say, hey, bud, no cooler, or hey, bud?
Well, we have police officers walking around looking and stuff, but and if somebody on the staff, we have a lot of volunteers milling around, and yes, we approach them and say, this is, you're beyond the limits. This is where it is. My problem with this is people stealing them at the end of the night for souvenirs. That's why we need. Well, I've called them, and that's why we're around. But yes, we have volunteers. We don't have specific volunteers standing there or monitoring that. We haven't had any problems. But we have the chamber and the Main Street staff of those events wandering around. Myself, I'm never at any single station wandering around. So we monitor it, but we haven't had any problems.
You're always in motion.
Yeah, always.
I'm just concerned about the glass. You know,
that's in your ordinance, and that's what we are constantly harping on and working on. That is one thing that it is in your ordinance.
Establishments need to realize that this mayor, this council,
we had one last year that screwed up.
Yeah,
and they know how.
I mean, I screwed right. glass this year.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm talking about this past year, but
and the year yeah. before, there was
well,
glass
we I think
no,
we've made.
No, I disagree. There was not glass everywhere.
Well,
there was one establishment, and they were addressed.
I've got pictures.
And you make it sound like they're all serving glasses.
From the stage to Wainwright's.
Well,
I have pictures of it.
Well, you, okay.
Well,
I'm telling you, that establishment was they were addressed, and that was the way it's supposed to be handled. And we're not going to make everybody put their head down because one business screwed up. One of them,
right.
And we addressed it immediately in a business-like manner, and that's the way things should
and
go.
And we're more on top of that every time, and we're really on top of it now.
I didn't want you to get upset. My only point was saying that, you know, we need to let these businesses know that
we're
not going to accept it.
Right.
And at the next time, they won't be like children.
I think after this past event with the chief's help, I think they finally got it. I know the hotel has gotten it. They've gotten it.
I'm not pointing fingers.
Well, I am. I'm pointing it. Only saying that the hotel really stepped up this time.
They got to follow the rules.
Right. And we'll be on.
Am I correct that the chief met with each one of the folks afterward and did a post thing?
We did post, not with everyone, because we didn't go down to school or tax mask.
Okay.
And again, we didn't have any issue that it didn't break by, but we definitely are there to bend it. You know, folks were doing a great job and they're coming up with concepts. We undertook what the other people did and said, this is what the other proprietor did. These are things that you can go ahead and do. And the thing of it is, I didn't call them either. So just to say that, we actually there got called by the individuals and say, hey, I know that you guys have had some concerns and sat down and they had a discussion with us. And again, it was very fruitful. And again, I think that's what we do. We go ahead and they're recognized afterward any kind of issues. We build on those and move forward.
I know I had this concern last year, and you said that there was nothing to do about it. The May 3rd and the May 10th are
right.
close together.
They're close together, but as I said last year, the year before, they're two entirely different types of groups and events. And this is kind of the kickoff for the event season, and it's just happened the way it is, that we have jazz and blues and then May Day Play Day, and they are two different crowds, two different types of events, two different, but big events. They're both very big events and bring in two different crowds, and even though they're back to back, they seem to be working and they seem to be bringing two different types of, I mean, a little bit of local people and all that are here. Yes, there are, you will see some of the same people, but they really do cater to two different crowds. And I will say this, the merchants downtown love these events. They spend money. They are huge money makers for the merchants downtown.
Great. We haven't really had any problems. No. And I think it's fair that you've opened it up to the other businesses off the side streets, so that it's not all about just the businesses on Main Street. You know, we're not just Main Street, you know. We have a lot, you know, I just think, you know, we haven't had any problems, but you know, we just gotta keep doing what we're doing, so
well,
we don't.
When you say two different groups, are you talking about age?
Age spending power. Jazz and blues is a much sort of an older crowd, spending more money. The May Day Play Day, I view that as, they spend a lot of money downtown, and they're going to be here longer this time. We're going to extend it hour wise, but that is the crowd that we are building memories with. We want that crowd. As Steve Freeney questioned that crowd, and I said, Steve, this crowd, you look around at this crowd, in 3 years, these people will have disposable cash, and they will have that memory of downtown Berlin, and they'll be back over and over spending. He said, got it. I'm for it.
It's a younger crowd.
It's a younger crowd,
you know, teenagers. And
it's the 21 to 35-year-old crowd. Jazz and blues is the 21 to 65, 70, 80. Hey, my age and older, yeah, my age. My age and younger.
Generally speaking, regardless of what it is, the older, more mature crowd with money finds us no matter what we do.
Yeah.
We have to work at cultivating younger people.
We have
because,
yeah.
Quite frankly, they have limited income, they have a lot of obligations for their children, and we definitely want. They are going to be.
Yeah, this
once more than
that event draws a big from Salisbury and Ocean City, a 21-year-old to 35-year-old crowd into town who've never been here.
They follow
WOCM and they come over here, and then we've got them hooked, or we hope to come here and eat dinner and bring their parents and do all
that. Didn't that start as a Friday night event?
Friday night, it was a second Friday. What we've done with our event schedule this year, at the request of the Art and Entertainment Committee, we've taken the big events that were tied in with the second Friday art stroll off of second Friday and moved them either to another Friday or to a Saturday. May Day Play Day was a second Friday, now it's a Saturday. The Shakespeare play was second Friday. Now it's the Friday before the second Friday.
So it's just moving things independently, like we wanted to do,
right,
to get things.
Yeah. So eventually, so essentially, we have more events with not a lot more energy, or volunteerism and all that, because the high heel race is a very big up and coming, and they'll be here probably in the next couple meetings. That's automatically became a big event on second Friday. We have moved it off to another Friday. And so it's not competing with the art and entertainment, the art stroll.
But that was part of your marketing plan, right? To
get
back off these events, and then when they got standing on their own.
Right, move them. And to be quite honest, the Art and Entertainment Committee is really charging forward and developing this art stroll as an independent once a month
front event.
And I've told them, no alcohol, no suspension of the and no closing the streets. But you can do whatever you want if you don't do those two things.
It's working.
Yeah, it's working, yeah. And they're really promoting it and bringing in another younger crowd. The last one, I was up at the Globe, and it was very, very crowded. And I looked, not only did I not recognize it, I didn't know any of these people, and it was packed with young artists.
And that was in January.
But I bet you know them all now.
Well, I'm trying to. Yeah. I'm trying. I can't stay up as late as they do.
But I think you've done a fantastic job.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I
well, thank you.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Purnell to approve the special event exceptions for consumption of alcohol, basically for open containers with the new borders and with the dates that have been presented in the presentation. All in favor say aye.
And no bottles. It's in there.
No bottles, no bottles.
Yeah.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion passes unanimously. Thank you. You had a very thorough presentation.
Well, thank you. Now, Tom, just in case they have any questions about the chamber. This, you have a letter from Tom Schultes, the incoming president of the chamber, for permission to sell beer and wine on Jazz and Blues, and then I think beer at the other events. That's the wrong motion. It's under that one. Yeah, they do not sell during the New Year's Eve celebration.
Blues and Jazz, May Day, Play Day, Fiddlers, and Oktoberfest.
And this is a funding stream for the chamber.
And this is the same as, I'd say, at least the last, since these events have had this ability, the chamber has been selling at all
these events.
And exclusively recently just supporting the local brewery, Burley Oak, on the wagon. So. Okay.
And when we come, each one of these events will come before you with roadblocks, location of the beer garden. We've got two locations for the beer garden. Commerce Street for Jazz and Blues and May Day Play Day, and Jefferson Street for Oktoberfest and Fiddler's Convention. No. Fiddler's. I think Fiddler's is still, that's only Friday night at Jefferson Street.
We're supporting Brian at Burley Oak. We exclusively poured the local beer as a plan. Originally, I think they got away from that a couple of years ago, but now we've worked out with Brian Brushmiller, and we're exclusively just pouring the beer made in Berlin for the Berlin festivals.
For all these that you requested?
Yes.
Does anybody have any questions for Tom regarding his request?
I'd like to make a motion to approve as submitted.
And we have a motion by Councilmember Purnell to approve the request by the Berlin Chamber of Commerce to sell beer and wine at four events during 2014, Jazz and Blues Bash, May Day, Fiddler's Convention, and Oktoberfest. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, the motion passes unanimously. Good luck with your year.
Thank you.
I think the Chamber is really, evolving and
good things are
very, very pleased to see the direction that the Chamber has been taking, because I know you've had a lot of challenges, but it's been going.
We couldn't do it without the mayor and the council's help, so thank everyone for that. And look forward to a good year.
Good.
Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. All righty. Next are our departmental reports. First, Finance Department, Natalie Saleh.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Finance Department and Billing Department working today and yesterday on reporting to Public Service Commission. It's simple monthly reporting for the PCA rates. We also started a new billing project. Basically, we'd like to review all of the accounts of Town of Berlin, whether it's water, electric, or sewer, stormwater, and just determine whether accounts have been set up correctly, what's that standing balance. Basically, I would just call it a simple in-house cleaning somewhat.
So that's all of your enterprise or utility accounts?
Yes. And that would take probably a couple of months to go over.
A couple months?
Yeah. We work in a preparation of 1099s, which basically miscellaneous income that we report to vendors. Those forms are due at the end of this month, and they're almost done and should be ready for submission in a couple of days. We are still in our process for the phone system research. Tomorrow we meet in with another vendor at 10 o'clock. And just like I already mentioned in prior meetings, we're just researching, getting information, and making sure we have knowledge of what is out there and what would be the best for us. Friday the 24th, Laura and I went to Maryland GFOA conference. And conference had several topics and sessions. The whole day was divided in five sessions. And so many interesting things were discussed. I think most of us will put a little report for your review. It was part of about Maryland economy and GASB updates, which basically for financial reporting. It was some of the topics discussed on State Department of Taxation on property taxes, which I found very interesting. That's all I have. Thank you.
Great. Excellent.
Dormio, you congratulations, though. I thought you got an email somebody that you got a little scholarship there or something.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's for upcoming May conference.
Awesome. Very good.
Do you have a clue how many 1099s we sent out?
The same miscellaneous, about a range of 15-20 each year, and then we have 1099 interest, which for our bond that we have for the land purchase, it's about four of them, but we won't have
it. But that's the bulk of our vendors.
Not large.
Okay, thank you. Next is the Deputy Town Administrator, Mary Boland.
Good evening. Included in your packets this evening was a letter from the Worcester County Arts Council. I'm very pleased that they were able to give the Parks Commission a $500 grant toward the mural project. So we're continuing to move forward with that, and we are still seeking sponsorships for that project in just about any form that they may take. Here we go. That's all I have this evening.
Okay, thank you. This is Public Works Director Mike Gibbons.
Thank you, Mayor. After prior to the last snow event, we pre-treated all the street, which seemed to help quite a bit with the initial snowfall that we had. And then after we went through and plowed the streets the first time on Wednesday morning, we went back and applied salt again, and then followed back with another round of plowing, and then another round on Thursday morning. So we used about 7 tons of salt, 8 tons maybe, and it seemed to help quite a bit with the snow removal. In the future, we're planning on pre-treating as long as we can get out in front of the storm, and it takes about 5 or 6 hours to treat all the streets.
And it just says that's always viable as long as it's not raining.
Okay. Yeah, and that's what happened the other day. It started raining before it started snowing, but it still was able to stay there in place, and we got the benefit of it. And then I'm working with Mike today on the visitor center roof. We started, we're going to get a new scope together and rebid that project. So we may be able to have that for next mayor council meeting.
Okay, very good. And again, please pass on our compliments about the clearing of the roadways under extreme conditions. We didn't get, neither did anybody else in the region, but we didn't get the benefit of above freezing weather for the day or two after, and I know people had to use caution, but I know if people drove around and looked, if people wanted to get out, they certainly could, and so you know, all did a fantastic job under extremely extreme conditions, I guess, that's the best I can say, and apparently we had no major incidents. And so we didn't have any injuries on the job.
No injuries.
Well, thank you. And I just hope we don't have to do it again, but be prepared. it's supposed to get cold again tonight. And there's just a chance of snow tomorrow.
They put a winter storm advisory out earlier
In
Worcester County.
Yeah, but again, it all depends on where you are. You know? And we'll find out. So just I'm sure we'll be prepared. Okay, next is Electric Department Director Tim Lawrence.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. It's the first thing I'd like to report on is that the electric system has held up well during the cold spell that we've had. Also, in the past 2 to 3 weeks, we've set basically three new peaks for the town. The highest summer peak that I've seen in the past 3 years was about 11.4 megawatts. One day when I walked in, when it was like 8 degrees outside, at 7 o'clock in the morning, we were sitting at 12.6 megawatts.
Wow.
That was the highest peak in the history of the
town.
Wow.
Are not our peaks normally in the summer?
Yes, ma'am, they are. They're normally in the summertime, but this winter,
I can't wait to get my license.
Yeah,
I can wait.
That's one big concern I've had is, you know, when you see that amount of load, you're thinking of the revenue that's coming in, but then again, you're thinking of, you know, what the bills are going
to
be.
The folks that have to pay it.
Yeah, we actually did electric meter reading today, and our telzons are set up when they're out of range. You always get this indication on there that says out of range, and basically almost every one of them is out of range because of the amount of KW usage.
Well, that doesn't sound good.
It doesn't, but I mean, it's expected everywhere that this cold snap. I mean, to have 8 degree days, that's very unusual.
I think that might be helpful. I was talking to Michelle was about electric bills. She said that they write every day what the temperature is.
Yeah,
she can tell you how many days it was below freezing.
Yes.
I think it would be good to pump that out on the channel to let people know that, you know, you're getting a big electric bill, but like 30 of those days it was below freezing or whatever.
Yes, ma'am. I had a customer that I was dealing with a high electric bill. It just happened to be one of the new AMI meters that we have installed across the street. I was actually able to do a printout of a graph chart for the past 4 months, and I would show her usage every day. And then I could also show her the temperature for each day, so she could see, you know, why her electric bill was so high because it was cold on that day. And then you could see the temperature go up and the usage would go down. So that,
people understand, you know, when they see that, you know, when you tell them that, you know, well, wait a minute, you know, we were under extreme conditions.
Yes.
I'm sure that this whole bill was probably all under,
it was
probably 4 or 5 days where it went above freezing, right?
Yes, it was from the cold snap.
But I think, you know, we should let people be prepared so they don't do like my husband when he opens the door.
One of the other things I wanted to report on is the wind generator. Okay. This past Wednesday, we actually installed the generator, and that was the day that it was like 8 degrees outside, and the wind was blowing about 25, and it was pretty cold. This is a picture where actually we transported it. We came up with this idea of the 55-gallon drum. We actually had that in our shop, and we were trying to figure out where we could put this thing to mount the blades on it to get it up high enough off the ground where it would be stationary. So we actually ended up mounting the blades on it at the shop, and then we transported it in a truck with the pallet and the barrel sitting on it, and we had it strapped to it. That way it could support itself and it would go into location. Here we're actually lifting the wind generator up. The pole is already set behind the crane there, and we're carrying it over to put it up on top of the pole. That's me up in the bucket. I'm real short, so you can barely see me. We're carrying it over. We're getting ready to mount it on the pole. That pole is about 21 feet from the top to the ground. We're still carrying it over to mount it. Okay, we're mounting it. And what we're doing there is I'm having to bolt it to the top of the pole. There's this bracket that's got 4 bolts in it. But Doug Richards forgot about putting a lifting eye on it to lift it from the top, so we had to strap it around it. So I had to bolt the front side of it and then let him set it down, and then I had to push it up with my arm to get the sling out from under them and set the battery down. That's one of the new things he's going to do with the larger one that's going to be built, 50 kW. He's putting lifting eyes in the top of it so he can lift it without having to use the straps. This is after it's mounted. It actually started turning once I set it up there and got it turned towards the wind when the blade started turning.
Where's all your staff in the truck?
They're in the truck.
Laura was out there.
I was there. The mayor was there.
The mayor, Sheila, was there.
Yeah, just not standing up.
Yeah, it was really cold there.
Standing behind or inside. It was a wind chill.
Yes, the wind was blowing a gale that day.
What you see on the panel there, that box on the right-hand side, that's the inverter. That converts the generator, produces what's called DC voltage direct current. All the other wind generators are AC. This is the difference. This is DC. I got a history lesson on that today from Doug Richards. I talked to him on the phone. Many, many years ago, they tried to develop wind generation using DC, and they kept burning the generators up, so they gave up on the idea. But he kept going with it, and he finally developed it on how to do it. What it does, by generating DC versus AC, which is alternating current, you lower the cost of the generator, you lower the height, but it maintains the same output as an AC generator would. Plus, the lifespan is extended because you don't have gears in it. What happens with the generator that has gears, it causes vibration. It's called a wheel cog. It's sort of like a loping effect, and what vibration, this is a lesson that Doug Richards gave me. That type of generator, what it basically does over time, it vibrates itself apart. Mm-hmm. That's what happens. On a gearless generator, this does not have what's called a cog. So it's freestanding. So the lifespan is actually extended.
When he explained it to us here, it looked like a bunch of flywheels.
Yes,
like
it's plates all together.
I mean, it made sense.
Right.
He explained it.
How's it sound?
What's that sound?
How's it sound?
You don't have the sound either, because in a generator that has gears, you hear that clunk. It's sort of like a transmission in a car when you put it in gear. You have the same thing with a generator that has the gears in it. You have magnets in it. What happens is it goes past each magnet, it kind of grabs it, and that's that clunking noise you hear. This basically spins it freewheeling.
How come the one up the road doesn't work all the time, even when it's blowing hard? Is it broken?
Are you talking about the one at the college?
Yeah. What's that? I go by there, it's never spinning. The other day, the wind was blowing.
Yeah. The thing about that generator there is it's very large, and the blades on it are very long. So you've got to have a pretty good amount of wind to get that thing to turn it. Because it's a generator, it has gears in it, so it has a lot more friction to it, so it takes more wind speed to get it going.
Right.
This one has no gears, takes a lot less wind. I mean, wind wasn't blowing that hard, and then it was turning as it put it up.
This is the 5 kilowatt.
Seven kilowatts.
And that will be in place for about 2 months, 2 to 3 months?
Till May.
Till May.
They're actually building the 50 kW right now. The reason he installed the 7 kW first is he wanted to gather wind data, direction of the wind, and also the DC voltage output of the generator. And basically, he wanted to make sure this is the first one of its kind built. He wanted to make sure it would stand well.
Now, the difference in the general size, but it'd probably be easiest to imagine by the length of each of the blades. These blades are what, about 4 feet?
They're about 4 feet, and
the new one will be about what?
20 feet. Plus, the pole is about 21 feet, and the 50 kW is 65 feet. Could be three times that height.
And how tall did you say this pole was?
65 feet to the center of the hub. That one's 21.
21 feet. Yeah,
to the center of the hub.
I want to ask you one other thing, Tim, about poles. What are those poles they're putting in on the coastal highway that look like hurricane-like poles?
You're talking about the 90-foot steel pole?
What's up with
with that?
They're basically upgrading the transmission line that feeds through there, and they want to make it work and withstand hurricanes. They're actually designed to withstand up to 120 miles an hour.
Have you noticed them? I think you've probably seen Troy. Those are somewhere else.
Yes.
I hope I don't get you in trouble, but I took a tour of the tech center about 2 months ago.
Yes.
And they have one of these in the tech center.
Okay.
But I think it's by gears. I don't think it's like the one we have.
This is the first one of its kind in the world.
Right. So I gave him your name.
Okay.
And he's very interested because a lot of students at the tech center live in this area.
Yes.
And he might be interested in, Wilson is installed and everything. He might be interested in bringing some of his classes up here.
Yeah, that's one of the things we actually discussed when we decided to do this, was allowing schools and classes and teachers to come out and show them the generator. And we thought that would be something good to do with them.
Well, I think I've been looking forward to it, and that's a big step.
Yes.
And so far, is it measuring at this point? The idea is part of it to measure to see if it's as efficient as you expect.
Well, the meter that's installed, I don't think the meter's in that picture, but there's a meter in there now. That's a net meter, just like we use for our solar customers. So it records delivered power, it records received, what they send back to us, and also power factor and demand. And basically, when it gets to turning, we'll start seeing that showing up on the meter. As of right today, it's not enough yet to do that. We haven't had quite enough wind to get it going.
I don't think it's going to be a problem. So.
No. We'll
definitely
have to
stop spinning in March. Okay, great. Excellent. Congratulations, and especially that was an amazing job, boy. It seemed to be
just
insufferable cold.
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you.
And up next is Police Chief Arnold Downing.
Nothing to report this time.
Right. Good news is good news. Next is Planning Director David Gore.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Just briefly, Michael Day touched on it earlier. Last Historic District Commission on the 8th, we had to go to a special session the next week to approve the signage for the Burley Tavern, which they did the following week, and to approve changes and signage for Blacksmith. She's going to call that new restaurant. So two new businesses are positive for the town. So our commission liked what they saw, what the signage was, and what the changes would be. I received Friday a stormwater management plan for at the Ames Plaza, where that Tractor Supply is intending to go. We've got a stormwater management plan, so I assume the blueprints and the architect's plans are right behind it for permitting for that.
And you said that would be what kind of
Tractor Supply? Like that, they have one in Salisbury, they have one in Pulse Mobile. I'm sure you're familiar with the chain.
Yeah, thank you.
I've received a packet so far, some plans and for the permitting for the Berlin Main place, the next building up there, the office complex on North Main. That's all I have this evening.
That's all right. That's a good start to the year. All positive things. Thank
Welcome
you.
Welcome back, David. I know you have been feeling well.
Thank you. Everybody's been great to me. Thank you.
Good. Excellent. Next is Human Resources Director Jeff Fleetwood.
Three things, Mayor and Council. Hats off to all department heads and employees for the most recent weather event. No incidents, no accidents. I think that's to be applauded. Friday's payroll run that we distributed total compensation statements will go out to all employees. I'd like some constructive feedback on those that go out as well. And then on February 6th at 1 p.m. here, you all are cordially invited. Light Fair will follow, but there will be a session here through Chesapeake, the old IWIP, on ergonomics.
Okay.
That's
Washington.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And next is Economic Community Development Director Michael Dowd.
Just want to briefly talk about the coolest small town in America. Laura, Megan, and myself have been meeting with the county committee that's on this, Mark Huey and Lisa Challenger, and we've been meeting weekly on this thing. And today we were on the front page of Budget Travel's blog. It went out, I don't know how many thousands of people got that today. We have a copy of that. We've got the button stickers going out now everywhere. WOCM radio station is pumping it up as much as they possibly can. The merchants are receiving these little bag stuffers, and Laura and I've been touching base with some statewide, along with Lisa Challenger, statewide folks trying to get it out, because we are the only town in Maryland in this contest, so we're getting a lot of support from our neighbors, neighboring towns, small towns on the shore, small towns on the western shore, large towns. They all see the benefit of this. We've got these posters going up throughout town too. So we're on it. We've discussed, we're probably, in the last 2 weeks of the event, of the contest, we're going to hold a contest ourselves, probably through social media, to get a last ditch effort to really get our numbers up. Right now we're 4.5 percentage points ahead of the second place. We're in the first place on this, and we've been holding that lead. And I don't know if Laura wants to talk about who she talks to. On Friday,
when you heard Natalie mention that we were at a finance officers conference, I asked the president of the association to make the announcement, and then still got several folks to vote and handed out the buttons. That seemed to have gone over pretty well. And then this weekend I emailed Scott Hancock, who's the executive director of the Maryland Municipal League, and he put in their weekly news blast, Vote Berlin, so I'm hoping that we can do that every week throughout the contest. So.
I think social media has really played a huge part in this, and because the county has a part-time social media guru, who's Lisa Challenger, has put on this project, it is really pushing us through this. And it's amazing what you'll see on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram as to what is happening. Megan knows more about this stuff than I do, and she's pushing it out there as well. And I think it's really keeping everybody aware of that they have to vote every 24 hours.
I should also mention I've asked Sharon to send out reminder emails, so she's providing all the employees to vote once a day. Thank you, Sharon.
The thing I like about what I do with it is when I vote, it gives you that click to share it on Facebook, and then I blast it, because then they see what it is with the little, you know, icon there, and it's got all the links, and it gives them, you know, but probably 5-6 times a day, I push it out on Facebook and Twitter, because I just feel like the more, that's how we're going to win, through right. social media. And the more, you know, the more that everybody contacts friends and family outside of the area, because, you know, I want to see that 4.5 points get a little, you know, I'd like to be 10 points, but I mean, that would be so beneficial to the whole Eastern Shore with that designation to Berlin, because they'll come, you know, you can't buy that kind of publicity, you know that. Yeah. You can't.
That's an excellent suggestion. Thank you. We'll look forward to it.
And then the only other thing,
we've got a
flyer on Pappas Night at the hotel February the 6th. That's a fundraiser for Main Streets for their Victorian Christmas. As I said at the last, we're trying something different this year, having some of these fundraisers after the holiday so that we know how much money we've got. And we're not trying to tap into that all at once in December. So.
It makes sense. At least you know what you got before you need to spend it.
Yeah.
And also, too, I like the idea of having something to look forward to in the slower months.
Okay. Michael, do you think it helps when you go on that page to vote that Berlin is the first one to vote for?
It doesn't hurt. It does not hurt.
We can change the pronunciation all day long. We just don't change the spelling.
Okay,
very good. Excellent. Thank you so much. And next is the town administrator's report.
Before I read out the purchase orders, I just want to echo the mayor's comments. I think the staff did a wonderful job responding to the storm, and I'm very impressed by how closely and effectively they all work together.
Thank you.
On that note, let's see. The purchase orders for this week, we've got 2064 in the amount of $4,981.50 to Reliable Meter Service for 2014 electric meter testing required by the Public Service Commission. Purchase order number 1776 in the amount of $1,550 to John W. Tiger for maintenance data, which helps to operate water treatment plant. Purchase order 2098 in the amount not to exceed $4,500 to Hills Electric Motor Service for emergency repair of pump at Route 346 West Lift Station. Purchase order 2087 in the amount of $2,328.03 to pump up for diesel fuel for generator at wastewater plant. And purchase order number 1131 in the amount of $1,649.01 to Worcester Youth and Family Counseling for second quarter expenses.
Does anyone have any other questions?
I have a question on the second purchase order. If you go to the invoice, it talked about a description of work. It talked about operator upgraded personal computer, which caused trends and web stop working. Tried to restore personal computer with no luck, had to do something, something. But my question is do we have a policy that governs use of the computers and how they're upgraded and when and who does it, that kind of stuff?
I don't believe we do. Do we have a policy?
As far as with the upgrading, no. We do have a policy that, that discusses the use and abuse, if you will, of a town-owned computer. As far as the upgrade and all that, I'd have to defer to Mary on that.
And the authority to upgrade, do you, because my impression of reading this is that if this computer wasn't messed with, it would still be working.
Without knowing a little more about what had happened to make it stop working, it's hard to say. There are updates that are pushed through by cards that may have been incompatible, or it could have been something that somebody manually updated. I would have to know more about exactly what was happening with it.
Yeah, and my thought, have we received the upgrade from cards that would cause us to spend $1,500?
No, that should not be the case. Okay. I do feel confident about that. But this would not be one of the regular PCs. This would be a PC that's dedicated to a function, as far as I know. So I would just have to learn more about what happened.
The more I read this PO, I can't educate you. Jane's not here. Probably about a month ago or more, I remember I was down there, and Jamie was telling me that this state of computers is the brains, if you will, of that operation. And it was something to do with the antivirus on that computer that went sour for whatever the reason. And they had folks from cards that were there, and it spent countless hours there to get that thing up and running. So what the issue was, the specific issue, I do not know, but that computer that we're talking about here is dedicated to one and one function only. It's not there to be used to check email or whatever.
Well, I was just wondering.
I'll make a motion to approve all five purchase orders.
And we have a motion by Councilmember Whittingham to approve the five purchase orders as proposed by the town administrator. All in favor say aye. All opposed? The purchase orders are approved unanimously. I just want to make a note to everyone and to the public and so forth that at the second meeting in February, which is February 24th, the fourth Monday, our mayor and council meeting right here in town hall that evening. We will have a presentation by EA Engineering and the Water Resources Department to update everyone on the current status and plans of the town's stormwater management utility. To review what has happened during the past year, but also what we can expect, what has happened, what has actually been accomplished in what I'll call the trial phase, what has been done with the maintenance, and then what we can look forward to in the next, doing what we call the next four phases of infrastructure improvements. So if you have an interest in it, make sure we put something on the website, just because I know a lot of people, it's just impossible to know who's interested. If they are, it would be a good time to get everybody interested. Okay, that's it.
I just have a question. Where did this come from?
Let's see.
Lower Shore Land Trust. You know what that is?
Is it?
Yeah.
Taste of the Eastern Shore.
Yeah, Lower Shore Land Trust.
Lower Shore Land Trust. And I have one more. Sharon.
Yes.
And don't kill me, but I haven't been able to get back on my town email. Could you help me through it again?
I'll take care of it in the morning.
Thank you.
Just that I went to that legislative meeting and passed information on the war where we're getting back a lot of highway user revenue, and then we're giving us an additional $16 million to be distributed amongst the towns and municipalities in addition
to that.
I gave it to Laura to use for budget, and he told us exactly what we were getting for a rent.
And would that be for the new fiscal year? Excellent.
And Lieutenant Brown was there, Lieutenant Governor, and he said that the thing about it was this year that HUR money is being put into their budget under Department of Transportation, where the last few years it's kind of been a last moment thing. They say, oh, by the way, we're gonna. But now it's actually back in their budget again.
Because that's been, what, about 4 years?
5 years now.
That's great for baby. Thank you for the work you're doing.
I'd just like to thank Public Works and everybody else that worked with all the Public Works. Where I live, we live right at the end of the town's boundaries, and the county takes over. And I get a lot of flack from some of the people who live in the county, when they leave the county and come to the town. And this time, there was no flack. Everybody, and I've noticed the roads in the county were the same as the roads in the town. So we were right up with the county this time.
That should always be a goal.
That's a goal. That's a good goal.
Thank you. Does anyone from the public who's here tonight wish to address the mayor and council about anything we've done or any new topics? Does anybody from the press wish to address the council or ask questions? We stand adjourned. Please take care tomorrow morning when you go out. It's going to be dicey.